edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Each and every Tuesday in hour number 3, we are joined by Stan Deo of standeo.com, and we're going to get to him in just a second. But first, I want to bring you a word from our sponsor, Greenovative. The folks at Greenovative tell us that the response from our audience has been fantastic. Alan Riggs has been a guest on our show a number of times to talk about his product. The new G-Mag Complete Pack and Complete with Barter Pack are a big hit. We have negotiated with Alan Riggs for a good way to say thank you by offering a short-term discount. That's right. With masterful negotiations, the H&H team got him to agree to another 15%
Wait. Masterful negotiations. Is that why he wears a baseball helmet every time I go to see him? Go ahead.
No, they're going to, they have agreed to give another 15% store-wide discount from now through the 1st of May, which gives you about 5 days to take advantage of this offer. The Greenovative products make power anytime, anywhere, in any weather, day or night. They come with accessories to meet nearly any need during an emergency, and they are EMP proof. To get the discount, enter the code HAGMAN for 15% off. Again, the discount code is HAGMAN for 15% off the store-wide products. And again, their new G-Mag Complete Pack, complete with their Barter Pack, are their biggest hits. Discount code HAGMAN. You will be glad you did it. Thank you, Greenovative and Alan Riggs. With that, we're going to bring on Stan Deo from standeo.com. It's another Tuesday with Stan, and it's great to have you back on.
Am I here? Hello? Hello? Yes. Good to be back.
Loud and clear.
Yes, well, we're finally getting our roof done after the winds whipped them. A lot of the tiles are shingles off the roof. The guys have been out here for about two or three days doing it now.
So you called the guy. You called the guy to get your roof done.
You know that little easy button they show on TV? It's a lie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Dear. Yeah.
Well, this is good progress. Progress.
I want to start, Stan, and Dad, I don't think you saw this. Folks, go to standeo.com. Check out the pick of the day. Number one, you got an owl with a beautiful German Shepherd.
Isn't that neat?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow. I mean, you got a German Shepherd cuddling with an owl. It's not just hanging around him.
Yeah.
Cuddling.
That is priceless, isn't it? Yeah, little owl.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, there are some really nice things around us if we stop to smell the roses and have a look. This is just really cute, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's, I'm going to send that to my wife.
Is there a story behind that, or did you know of? Or okay, yeah, okay, there it is. I'm sorry, I got it. Okay, yeah, go to standeo.com, folks. Photo of the day.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see. That is a Belgian Shepherd.
Oh, yeah. Belgian Shepherd. Okay.
Yeah.
Not a German Shepherd. Get your geography right.
Yeah. You know, we've got two owls that hang around our joint out here too, and our dogs think that's really something great to bark at loudly at night.
Wow.
And today we had two prairie falcons join us. So,
it's a
very popular spot in the block.
Wow.
You can shoot pictures monthly for National Geographic.
There you go.
Well, yes, you can. I kind of try to figure out ways to keep them off of the smaller birds here that come to visit us as well. That's the sad part about it. Those are birds of prey. Get the owl and the falcon both.
It's amazing. Yeah, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Interesting.
Now, I missed the first part, you know, last hour. I wanted to hear that. You know, that sounded like a really knowledgeable guy you had on.
Yeah, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is a former CIA analyst, big time into the threat of EMP, nuclear, you know, he wrote Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from EMPs, fantastic books, but he was in government for a long time, and he knows this stuff. And he's saying, man, you know, this North Korea, I mean, in a nutshell, North Korea, big problem, especially from the satellites.
He reckons the satellites couldn't deliver stuff that would hurt with an EMP?
Yeah, at least there's that possibility. And then, of course, he also believed, again, just to convey in a nutshell, China not to be trusted with respect to any negotiations.
And Russia? Yeah.
Russia, well, no real security interest or economic interest with respect to North Korea, so they're kind of let China and the U.S. fight it out, kind of, so to speak, in North Korea. Hands-off approach, perhaps. But the threat to me, and Joe, I think you got the same thing. I think, you know, the threat is really ramped up over the last, if you remember, 1994 it was, the agreed framework as we approached war with North Korea under Clinton. It was Clinton, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in 93.
Yeah, 93, 94. Anyway, we're back there, except they're nuclear armed, and it's move the hand closer to midnight, I guess, is the takeaway from that.
Yeah, there wasn't really the solutions that would be good for anybody, or outcomes that would be good for anybody.
Yeah, that's
from what he said. So
I mean, we could agree or reach an agreement, but not a solution at the best case scenario. Ultimately,
well, you know, I wonder whether the remnants of the Sino-Soviet treaty against the United States back in the late 60s, I wonder if it survived the breakup of the Soviet Union, and that Russia and China will once again are still allied against the United States in the event of a nuclear confrontation. I can't see why they wouldn't be, because it would be in both of them's interest to bring us down.
It's a free-for-all out there, it seems like. There's no guy, to me, I don't know, Stan. Help me figure this out. You got North Korea, you've got all these, I don't know, we're kind of screwed, I guess, in a way. It seems.
You know, that does, you bring up a point I've got up there on my show images page, and image 38 right up there, top in the middle. More than ever, people need to be figuring out what they would do in the event of an EMP attack, or if we lose all the power, or, you know, and our computers are dead and cars don't work and that kind of stuff, and or a nuclear attack with that on U.S. soil. What do you do? You know, what kind of things are going to be a threat to you in addition to the radiation, the blast, and that kind of stuff? You got to look at gangs and, you know, how to weather the fallout, that kind of stuff. It is more important now than it ever has been since, you know, the missile crisis in Cuba in 63, I think it was. I put up there just a little summary of the chapters in Holly's book, Dare to Prepare, chapters 44 through 49. You're looking at six chapters there that are dealing with nuclear emergencies, how to prepare for, how to shelter. Will your food and water be contaminated by fallout? You know, the food may not be, but the water could be, and all that kind of stuff. Things you really need to know. And I've put that up there to remind folks. We're certainly getting a lot of people getting their book at the moment to get ready for, you know, a nuclear attack on the United States. And I think it is imminent. I mean, she wouldn't have spent nearly 10% of a 632-page book talking about it if it wasn't important, really important. And it's just, today it's even more so than ever. So we'll get that out of the way. Look at that. Have a look at those chapters and the subheadings underneath there. And if you don't understand fully what those subtitles or those subchapters talk about, you better get in and have a read of it, because all those things are important. Anyway, that's in keeping what we're talking about there.
Real quick, just to piggyback off what you said, while we have the capabilities, power, we have the technology to put things like this onto, onto discs or print as much material out as you can to have the hard copy. So if the electric grid does go down, and you know, you don't have everything on your computer that you won't be able to access or get to, there's, you know, keep a file specifically for life-saving information, whether it's medical treatment, or, you know, what you just, what was just up on the screen, any and everything that would help you that you might need, to count on in times that you won't be able to access it. It'll really go a long way.
Can I, Stan, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Too? Like my, my 1976 Jaguar Vondenplas or XJ6, that'll still run right after an EMP. I'm kidding. I don't have one of those, but
thank you, Holly. Some things, some will run, some won't. I'm not too sure that an EMP will kill the cars if they're in shelter, a garage with wire mesh around it, just part of the construction type thing that they do, in some of them that are made of cement and brick coverings. And, you know, if you got stucco, they put a wire mesh underneath that, and they're on rubber tires. So I don't know, if you're far enough away from the initial EMP, some of the cars may work. But if you survive one EMP, just remember there might be two or three others, either from the sun or from an enemy attacking the United States. And somebody like North Korea, for crying out loud, all they got to do is get close to us in international waters on somebody else's transport cargo ship, open up one of their cargo containers, launch a surface-to-air nuclear attack over the United States by just sending one bomb up high enough, close to the center of the country, maybe 200 miles up, blow it off, and you'll wipe out with EMP all kinds of infrastructure, communications, power supplies, roads, traffic lights, cars, everything in one hit. So it's a poor man's way to bring down a highly dependent industrialized country like this. So just remember that's very possible. And if you're not even thinking that's a possibility, look at what's happening over in California, for instance, where a lot of geological or geophysical changes, weather changes are happening, climate changes, and salad crops like lettuce and cabbage, a lot of things that people eat in their salad, they're either missing off the shelves here, or they're so expensive, like two or three. In fact, one of the crops Holly said was four times its normal price now, and this is just the beginning of what's going to eventually probably work out to be a famine.
Wow.
Okay, in our store here, she said, in the Walmart store, we haven't had cauliflower on the shelves for 4 weeks. Can't get it. So, as I say, this is the thin end of the wedge. You wouldn't think that you could have food shortages in America, but it's coming. And it's another reason for you to get prepared and get you some, freeze-dried food of some sort. She tells you about that in a number of the books. But get the stuff now. Don't put it off any longer. And for people in California and on the West Coast in general, you've got to realize that big quake they're all talking about is probably going to be a series of quakes. And it is so close. We're hearing experts in the field saying it is, count the days. It's not count the years. We're at the tail end of the predictions that have been made by USGS as to when the big one is going to hit. We're within months of that. So, do some soul searching and really think about it, how you get out of a certain place to safety by foot or by bicycle or whatever. Should there be earthquakes over in California, Oregon, and Washington offshore, even at Juan de Fuca Plate, where you go to escape the tsunamis, where you go to endure after that? Do you have family in the mountains or over toward Utah or something like that, or Nevada? You have to plan these things out and try to figure out that everybody else is going to be using the main roads. How are you going to get to safety? So a lot of that stuff, we talked about it kind of hypothetically in the last 10 or 15 years, but we're to the point where we're talking about it tomorrow.
Right.
And I saw the price of lettuce was in California was up from, $2.20 a head of lettuce to almost $4. And there's a number of, as you said, a number of other shortages or the prices are increasing dramatically. And I was doing some budgeting, calculating, just what me and my wife spend on groceries a month. And it's unbelievable. And when you look at how much, you spend on a monthly basis and then look at some of the other options out there, as you said, you know, storable food, buying in bulk, there are a lot of things that I can do and I'm sure a lot of other people can do out there, not only to save money, but to, you know, buy the necessities, in a way, in bulk, and also in a way that helps your pocketbooks. And it's really important, at least for us in these times, to you know, make sure we budget properly. Because what we used to do is go to the grocery store, no list. We would just get what we remembered and what we saw that we needed while we were there.
Hey, the days of shopping for the, you know, next couple of days, that's over.
Yeah.
It should be over.
Yeah.
And the things on the end of the aisles for the impulse buying, you got to have those too.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, and when we did the calculations, you know, from buying in bulk and to coupon cutting to looking for the right deals, you know, we're talking $100, if not more, a month, hundreds of dollars a month.
We use a ton of coupons, I'll tell you that. You'd be foolish not to. But anyway, we digress.
Well, I know you know, Holly picked out a number of the freeze-dried foods and stuff that we got here from various suppliers, and that's probably been 5 or 6 years ago, at least. And you know, things like, you know, freeze-dried, say, peas or corn or, you know, we've got rice in bags and things now, you know, recent to purchase it, so it's not off. But the point is that right now we could shut our door and about the only thing I'd miss would be fresh milk, but we've got powdered stuff and, you know, fresh butter, but we've got that too in cans and powder form. But, you know, that stuff we bought 6 or 7 years ago on those prices, which were cheaper, and we have them here. We've got them in our hot little fist. All we got to do is add water, and we got plenty of that. We've stored away, too. So mm-hmm. although we're feeling, you know, quite comfortable about that, a lot of folks, I'm sure, have not budgeted for that, and they're now going to have to change priorities if they want to, you know, either endure where they are when things start to get, you know, really serious crises like, you know, earthquakes or war or whatever, and then how to defend that stash of goods against your neighbors and friends that are going to come after it. That's the sad part of it, but that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Just name a crisis or you know, look around. I just...
Hey, the stock market broke 21,000.
There we go. You know? We're okay. We're okay.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was worried for a while.
Yeah, stand. I mean, all my cattle futures came in. I made, I think, $100,000 off $1,000. Oh, wait, that wasn't me. What am I saying? Yeah.
Oh Lord, you know, you have to laugh because it's just so serious every day that you just walk around with a glum face if you don't, you know, and that doesn't help anybody. The guys doing our roof are from Mexico. I didn't bother to ask the contractor whether they were legal or not, but I looked in their faces, you know, when they'd come down for a coffee break or whatever off the roof and talk with them a bit in Spanish, and I felt, you know, I would see them looking around and probably saying in their mind, you guys don't know what you've got, you know, how blessed you are, how lucky you are to have all the things you've got. And Holly was telling me, she remembers going down in various parts of Mexico years ago on holiday and seeing a lot of homes in the outskirts of the town that would have three walls of bricks or concrete, but no roof unless they hit some, you know, stretch some tarp or something over it, and the front was open. And that was a home for so many people.
Wow.
And I know in South America, you know, that there are, you know, like in Brazil and places like that, and further down into the continent, there are whole hillsides full of these kind of humpy type environments. And here we are talking about whether we get to go golf or, you know, how much our 401k is going to give us. But I saw it in these guys' eyes, you know, that you guys just don't know what you've got. That's why they want to try to get in here illegally or any other way, you know. Sadly, yeah. If you let them, they will destroy what they're after.
That's true. And I want to just share this with you, Stan. I think this is funny. I happen to think of this when you're talking. You don't know if they're, you know, you didn't ask their status. I was working a case up in upstate New York. And I had to interview someone on an apple orchard, and a huge apple orchard. I mean, you know, the commercial, hundreds of workers. And I pulled into the parking lot, and you could see all the workers. I got out of the car, and there was a, I was accompanied by, I think it was a sheriff, maybe. It was some law enforcement. And honest to goodness, man, in like a second or two or three, every one of the workers was like gone. And the apples and bushels were on the ground and everything. And the owner said, you know, don't do that. I really wish you wouldn't have like come in like that. Of course, they were all illegal and they just ran, thinking that it was, you know, INS or something. But, I don't know. Humorous? I don't know if that was humorous or not. It was just kind of weird.
I know.
This is back in the 90s.
Kind of one of those strange kind of humors. I mean, you laugh because you're shocked by it, really, but.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Well, anyway. You know, in fact, I said to Holly, I wonder if these guys think, you know, if they're looking to see if we're going to turn them in or something, you know, because who knows these days? They must be looking over the shoulder all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. I don't know, Stan. It's in a different world right now.
You know, while we're talking about immigration and I don't know, Stan, the Trump issued an executive order on sanctuary cities, and an Obama appointee Judge William Orrick issued an injunction preventing the government from enforcing the part of the executive order that states basically that the federal funds will be withheld unless these jurisdictions, if these jurisdictions don't comply with the federal law. Well, the injunction blocks that, and just looking here at this judge, he has a very interesting background. He was a big Obama supporter. He was appointed by Obama, donated over $30,000 to his campaign. But more interestingly is he was the judge who ordered the Center for Medical Progress Planned Parenthood videos not be released. And he's also at the head of a number of other controversies and strange decisions. But what's your take on this?
Stop the grant. I mean, you can stop the grants, right? The filing that judge did will stop a lot of blockage of funds that normally go to these cities and states temporarily, but it can't stop President Trump denying the grants. He can block the grants, but not the flow of cash that's under other appropriations. So that's what he's got to, what President Trump has got to do is get around that little hurdle. But, you know, seeing
Stan,
that guy, it's so
this.
Obvious.
What about, you know, Obama threatened to withhold federal funds from all jurisdictions whose schools did not allow the transgender bathroom policy? He said that he would withhold federal funds to the states whose schools would not go along with allowing boys and girls rooms and girls and boys rooms.
You know, it's, I guess it's the difference between the two parties' concepts about how to run a country, but you know, what's fair and what's not. But it's like the election results; it's all in the same vein. They lost the election. Oh, I'm going to spit out my pacifier and stomp my feet. You know, I mean, this is what it is. It's crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
Rules for us and rules for them, different.
You know, very much so.
We pray for President Trump and his administration to be able to set up and execute the policies they've talked about and want to do to give it a fair go. I mean, you know, they may make some mistakes, like they said on the first submission of the kill the Obama bill and put a new health care bill in its place. Okay, fine. They're going to come back with a new version of it, but you know, they didn't force it down anybody's throat. They did it the normal way at the moment, anyway. And I think that we have to give the administration a chance to try their policy if we're being a fair country, which is asking a lot at this juncture, isn't it?
Heck yeah. Yeah,
you know, sorry, go
it's
on.
Wrong. No, you know what, Stan? It's, I guess that's it, too. You've kind of really simplified everything in that statement. It's really, what's good for me is not good for thee, or vice versa. I don't know. I'm rambling. Go ahead, my friend.
You know, I was looking in the news today. I have an alert coming in from Google News every day about Prince Mohammed bin Salman, you know, the number two in line for the throne to Saudi Arabia. And he's gaining more and more power and influence as each day passes. And his king, his brother, the king, Salman, has appointed two of his nephews or cousins, anyway, close relatives, to other ministerial positions or ambassadorships. And it just adds to the power of the Saud family. And that's why people think that the designated survivor, the one to take over the kingship, they should King Salman be, you know, taken out for senility or just die or whatever. The legal guy that everybody thinks should take over is Prince Mohammed bin Nayef, MBN. And, you know, that's his initials, MBN, instead of Mohammed bin Salman, MBS. Now, it's not exactly the same as over here, but those are the two factions, you know, families that are dividing Saudi Arabia. And
Stan,
you heard that...
Sorry to interrupt you again, Stan, but we're up against the break. When we come back, we'll pick up right where we left off about the two factions that are dividing Saudi Arabia. And folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stan Deo is our guest. StanDeo.com is the website. And when Stan comes on, go to StanDeo.com. On the right-hand side, click on the show images page, and there you can follow along with what Stan's going to be talking about during his interviews on our show. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and the Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Chang Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Army's kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Army's kit at www.changelessonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
StanDeo.com. You know him, folks. He's a, I'm telling you. StanDeo to me is, a fascinating guy. I could sit, I feel like a little kid when I'm listening to him, because I could sit like at his knee and listen to him like all day long. And Holly Deo, the author of Prepare for Persecution. You folks, you gotta get that, especially now, right now, given the times that we're living in. And, you know, no one's pushing me to say that. It makes sense. Okay. Dare to prepare. Folks, if you don't have that book, you're gonna, please do yourself a favor, get that book. Dare to prepare. Speaking of books, I just want to mention two things. You know, some light reading, okay? Some very good reading, some very interesting reading is Racing with My Shadow by a listener, a very dear friend, Karen Rogers. Great book. She, man, yeah, I see the pictures in there where she was big time, man. Big time. She's a celebrity. Karen Rogers. Great book. Great read. Actually, very compelling read. Racing with My Shadow, Karen Rogers. And also, if you haven't done so already, one last thing, and then we're going to get back to Stan. Prepare for Persecution by Maria Kanise. You know, my wife and I were talking, and she said to me, you know, make sure you tell the listeners to spiritually prepare. Well, Prepare for Persecution by Maria Kanise, available on Amazon. That book should be flying out of Amazon crates at a time, because it's a great book. I'm humbled the fact that I was able to write the foreword on that, but that's not the reason for the book, to buy the book. There's a lot of spiritual preparation in that book, Prepare for Persecution. All right. I've said my.
All right, Stan, right before the break, we were talking about Saudi Arabia and the dividing factions, within Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is number two in line, has been given so much authority already by the king, without appointing him a successor, you know, de facto. He has given him, you know, the defense ministry, you know, as his portfolio plus a lot of other things. Now, he's young, he's 31, and so he's popular with the millennials there in Saudi Arabia. Until recently, the Saudi government was paying a lot of money to its citizens, giving them all kinds of, perks because of all the oil money that the Saudi family was bringing in. And it was obviously from the oil. Now, as I've said before, at the end of World War II, you know, 45, 46, Saudi Arabia was broke. It owed money to several countries. It couldn't pay its international debts. It was just a bunch of sheep herders or goat herders or whatever, camel jockeys, whatever. Now, all of a sudden, a small team of Californian oil prospectors came over and made a deal with the sheikh on the east side of Saudi Arabia, northeast side, on the Persian Gulf coast there, with the sheikh of Dammam Island. And they said, look, can we drill for oil here? Because, you know, we're looking for sources for it. And the sheikh says, yes, okay. So they drill six wells, and each one of them hits water. The seventh well hits oil, and a lot of it. And that's where the American and Arabian, the Aramco oil company was formed, right there where they drilled that seventh well, right in the middle of Dammam Island. Now, after that, they became immensely, immensely wealthy, of course, and that's power behind the scene all across the planet. Well, now then, the young prince of Mohammed bin Salman has put up for sale 5% of the shares that they have in Aramco. And he says, there's so much oil down there that it's worth, oh, at least $2 trillion on the market should we bring it all out right now. Well, a number of insiders in the oil industry and financial groups and investor groups have been investigating this. And I told you on the show a few months back, I said, I bet you anything that he doesn't have that much oil down under the ground. He's trying to get what he can out of it while people don't know about it. Because not only is he wanting to sell 5% of the Aramco holding, he wants to turn Saudi Arabia into tourism and other types, you know, mineral exports of gold and minerals. He wants to go that way, that their economy becomes dependent upon that instead of oil. Well, one of the people or the companies that was analyzing his claim to got a lot less oil, and they got some real serious reasons to find ways to boost their economy, and their allegiances, I guess, are very much a part of that. You know, the relationship between the Saud family and the White House is apparently still good, in spite of the fact that they supported the Democrats in this election, several others before that. They put money toward both sides, but they lean toward the Democrats. Now, when you say that the oil that they say they've got is one fifth of what it really is, you can prove this by looking at the Saudi investment banks, because they're looking for people to buy up that 5%, and they're getting no takers. The smart money is not supporting the oil in Saudi Arabia. And if they don't get it, there's going to be, you know, some financial problems in the country, believe it or not. Some of the personal fortunes may not be so hard hit because they've got it stashed away in other banks in other countries. But for the average person there in Saudi Arabia, this is a crisis situation. Anyway, just keep an eye on him. He's and his family. They are major players in the world and in the Middle East. And the Saudis do not like Iran. They their brand of the Muslim religion, you know, the Iranians, is contrary to what they have in Saudi Arabia. So they're looking for nukes from anywhere they can get them. From, I don't know whether Pakistan will give them to them or North Korea or whoever, but they're looking for nukes to use against Iran and some of the other countries that are harboring the ISIS radicals. Now, this is interesting in addition to the fact because about 1994, Rabbi Nakamani in Israel predicted that North Korea would trigger a nuclear war. And this Rabbi Nakamani, he predicted accurately in advance the Six-Day War in 67, the Yom Kippur War of 73, and he uses the Torah to back up his claims. And of course, he's dead now, but he said, of all the enemies, not Persia or Iran, not Syria, not Iraq or Babylon, and not Gaddafi of Libya, this was back in 94, he said it, none of those are the major threats to Israel. He says Korea will arrive here, and it will be a major threat to world peace and us, you know, with nuclear powers. And, of course, the man, you know, passed. He died. But and that was in 94 as well. But anyway, when you see his prediction and you see North Korea saber-rattling pretty loudly, and the United States and China and Russia all seem to be concerned what's going to happen there, this rabbi's prophecy could very well be true and about to happen. I know it sounds strange, but, you know, a small country like that, a small people, even in Daniel, they talk about the Antichrist coming into power with the help of a small people. And I don't know whether that meant short people or whether it's a small population or a small country, but North Korea fits all those. Interesting, isn't it?
Very much so. And, you know, just whether we're seeing the a number of I don't know what you'd even call them, groups, whether they're governments, whether they're parts of, you know, the shadow government, the deep state, foreign actors, whether we're seeing them testing Trump's resolve, or we are really seeing the that the hype, this hype is real, that it's more than just hype, that the potential for conflict on a number of in a number of regions in the world, in a much higher and more destructive rate than we've seen before, it's here. And I'm having a hard time with, you know, the news reports of all this stuff. When you and John brought this to my attention, John Robertson, about the differences between what's being reported about situations the U.S. is involved in the U.S. media versus in the international media. You know, Germany or the UK or Australia, they have a much more serious outlook, and you know, where we see you know, the rhetoric back and forth from Kim Jong-un to Trump and everything that they're saying, it seems as though many in the international community believe that we are much closer to the brink of war, even nuclear war, than even we think or we're being told.
Well,
and
it
doesn't look good.
Well, look, you know, certain things do need to be kept close to the chest when you're, especially in war games or, you know, national trade agreements or whatever. You don't show all your cards. Now, Americans get used to, and have gotten used to, being told everything. They want to know everything. They voted the party in power into power, and therefore they are entitled to know everything. That's just not clever business, and that's really not their right. You appoint people to do a job for you at the highest levels of the government, the military, and you've got to let them do it. And I would not be like these foreign pressers saying, I would not be panicking people here, and I certainly would not be telling the enemy that we're concerned that there's going to be a nuclear exchange. You know, we're really afraid or, you know, getting prepared. It just fuels idiots like that guy over North Korea. And he is, you know, a loose cannon. He's a factor that is really an unpredictable one, a random thing. He may just one day feel that, well, nobody is taking me seriously, so I'm going to, you know, blow up something or somebody. And he does have the ability to do that. He's got submarines, you know, a massive submarine fleet, and they're not as big as some of our nuclear reactor-driven ships, but still, he's got the ability to hurt us. And it only takes one atomic EMP type, you know, magnetic bomb over the United States at about 180 to 220 miles altitude. One of those will so cripple us that it will never recover. And so if he managed to get through all of our defenses and do that, you know, we're done. So that's why, you know, the foreign papers say a lot of things, and Holly and I lived over in Australia for years, and we did see the difference in reporting. There did seem to be the American news seemed to be censored, and there are pros and cons of that. Like I said, if it's just, you know, for political reasons to not let anybody know what's happening, keep you, you know, ignorant and, you know, happy that way, so you can control the population of America, maybe that's why they did it. But we could see other countries' news, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, would report things that you know, that we couldn't. Hold on just a second here. Okay. My little four-legged lady here needs to go outside, she said, so Holly just grabbed her. As I say, some of the news they report these other countries that we don't get here is useless news anyway, but and some of it they report, I can see why we wouldn't want to endorse that kind of news because it would hurt the security of what we're doing. So it's a confusion all over the planet. That's Satan's ace up his sleeve, is confuse the people, put so many things at them in so many different directions that they are totally confused, and that's when he wants to come in and strike while we just don't know whether they're coming or going, as they say.
Stan, you mentioned the North Korean submarines, and I've been reading a little bit about these, and a number of people believe that they are very dangerous in the sense, and I don't, I'm not a scientific or mechanical guy, but apparently there's something different about these submarines where they have the ability to go undetected, and they're diesel operated, which makes them easier to find, and then there's something else about them that makes them, more difficult, to find. Do you have any information about the types of submarines they use and the technology that they're
no more than what you would have. As I said, I don't think they're nuclear reactor type thing. I think they are diesel submarines, which are noisy, and they can't travel underwater for as long as the others can. You know, they have to surface for air exchanges and for you know, refueling occasionally, but. I don't know how they would have the stealth technology you're talking about unless they got it from the Chinese or the Russians. We know that that both the Russia and China can get it within 20 miles of our border on the West Coast and not be detected. They've proven it, you know, by sneaking up and surfacing, saying, ha-ha, I'm here, I gotcha, and then, you know, chugging off into the ocean somewhere. So did North Korea get some of this technology? It's possible. And I don't know how they're masking, you know, the Russian and Chinese submarines, frequency. You just got to be able to pick it up. So I don't know. That's the short answer. I don't know very much about their submarine fleet other than it suddenly surfaced. And the one purpose of it is to be aggressively, you know, attacking the United States.
Okay. If we can kind of switch gears here, going to your show images page, number 35, if we could talk about this a little bit. I just clicked on the article, but the documentary, Debunking Evolution?
Yeah. Yeah, we filed for an early release DVD copy. It arrived, I think it was Friday. One of the best filmed and scripted and supported documentaries I've seen in the Christian community as far as, you know, proving that the evolution concept is wrong. And there were several just salient points that they made that, we, you know, when you think about what they said, you think, well, of course, that does disprove, you know, evolutionary changes, say, in the Grand Canyon and the layers of, you know, fossils and stuff they found there. It's such a fantastic proof, I couldn't believe it. One of the things that stood out was they were talking about the flood of Noah, and they were talking, you know, with biologists and stuff. All these guys were PhDs. There was not a single one that wasn't. And they said, look, you know, Noah took two of every, you know, righteous, you know, good animal into the ark, and so many of the unclean animals and that kind of stuff. And people would say, well, how could you make an ark big enough to have every kind of animal on the planet? And the biologist said, look, if you look at the spectrum of, you know, the genus, the phyla of the various animals in the world, the birds and the mammals and all this, you'll see that they fall into categories. There are the feline, you know, the cats, the mountain lions, the leopards, they're all part of the same DNA structure and just minor variations in the gene structure. Okay. If you look at the lupi are the dogs. You know, if you look at the dogs and all kinds of dogs, wolves, and things that you have within that, then all you need is a pair of dogs of any kind, and they've got in their DNA the material to be adaptively mutating, you know, in their environment. Same with the cats, same with the birds. And so he said, look, you don't need every kind of cat, just a pair of cats. And from their DNA, in different environments, they will produce, you know, leopards, tigers, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, wow, that's how you could have so many species onto the ark, because you only need the representative, you know, genome. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting.
Wow. Well, and see, that kind of that supports what the evolutionists are trying to say is that, well, look, this butterfly is mutated because it's in the snow and that was in the heat, and, you know, this cat has done this because it's in the desert and that was in the mountains. And, okay, they adaptively mutate after the flood, you know, to their environment. So it just makes perfect sense. Anyway, there are a lot of little goodies like that in this documentary. As I say, the film quality was exceptional, and the arguments were straightforward and not too highbrow. You know, they weren't $50 words. It was explained in simple speak so that even I can understand it. So there you go.
Well, it's something I just I bookmarked it, Stan, and I'm going to have to wait for it to come out and check it out when it does.
Well, it's out now. I got one of the first DVDs. I'd been on the waiting list for 6 weeks until they released it.
Okay, and I thought you said you got an early edition copy, but okay, that's good.
Oh, well, it is the first release. You know, like I just stood in line, and, you know, like standing outside the store before the sale starts, you know, but I got mine, and I'm very glad that I did. It has Dr. Steve Austin that did the study for 2 or 3 years for his doctoral dissertation on Mount St. Helens and how it created a 1/40th scale Grand Canyon in 2 or 3 years. You know, and he showed how it happened and how the water flows from the different layers, you know, formed the, like would have been the river that etched out the Grand Canyon. It shows that it etched out the Mount St. Helens, you know, downflow from the ash and various things, and how the water that was in the layers of ash that came out, this layer, that layer, this layer, that layer, how the water condensed and then fell down to the low points underneath all that ash and made little rivers that eroded the smoothed edges as the stream flow would do if it were doing it over millions of years. Anyway, just another one of the things I didn't know about that one, but the proofs they gave and the illustrations were just really good. I just, you know, I wish I knew how to get a hold of the producers, because if you try to reach these guys, you know, they've got a phalanx of people that keep, you know, wannabe scriptwriters or, you know, storylines from bothering them, because there'd be a lot of people try to say, hey, look at my idea. And I'd be one of those saying, all right, let me add to your arguments. You need to know about what caused the flood, because they couldn't figure out what caused the flood. I can show them that. You know, can't reach them. Where was the Garden of Eden? Why is it so hard to find today? But where is it? Okay. I need to tell them that. Why does Atlantis fit into Noah, you know, and his family, and why was Atlantis destroyed, you know, for what they were doing in Genesis 6? And that's the sad part about it. You just can't get through the protective cordon of people that, you know, stave you off. So for one of being able to get through, I guess we can't tell these things to them.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay. I know there's another crowd right underneath that in image 32. That's the guy that got a hold of a bunch of these DVDs and or put me on the waiting list and got it for me. And he has a website and a service that goes to the schools, and it has lesson plans for various students and subjects dealing with creation versus evolution. And so the teachers can take these lesson plans and these videos and materials and tell the students, look, here's the evidence, the facts. You decide, is the Bible correct or is evolution correct? And, you know, I just think that people like that, to this guy's organization, ought to really be supported, and people ought to grab those lesson plans, and if there's, you know, like teaching at home, homeschooling their children, get these. I mean, they're just, I don't get a commission for it, but I'm just telling you that I'm really impressed with what they're doing at the Genesis Apologetics site there. And you can click on that picture of Lucy, the alleged missing link, and go to his site and see all the stuff they do. Their work is probably more detailed and involved than that is Genesis history video, because they have so much more data to present and a lot more time to present it than in a 90-minute documentary. However, that's my rave on their products. I was impressed, as I say. I haven't heard much on. Sorry, go on.
Joe's pretty hot on the Bill Nye videos. Sorry, Joe.
Yes, Dan. I don't know if you saw. Oh my goodness, there's a. I'll send you the article now.
All right.
Speaking of, Bill Nye has a new special that was put out on Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay. And Sport. Bill Nye, the science guy, for those of you who might not know who he is, he was a, he's not a scientist. He's an engineer who had a TV show, in the 90s, for kids for science. Well, he has this new show on Netflix. And folks, if you go on HagmanReport.com, the article's up there. Stan, I just sent it to you. You're not going to have time to watch the video, nor would you really want to. But part of Bill Nye's new science show includes transgenderism. And the title of the article is Bill Nye's Bizarre Video on Transgenderism Bombs on YouTube. It's a rap video of this woman rapping about her private parts and about how you should, how gay sex is good and you should be bisexual. I mean, it's just very vulgar, graphic. And the show is called Bill Nye Saves the World. Any thoughts on Bill Nye?
Good grief. You know, these people are going to be sorry that they took this position. One of the practical problems with homosexuality, with, cohabiting without marriage, is that you don't your population doesn't expand like it used to, where you have 12 children in a family. People don't want to do that anymore. It's too much work. Maybe one child or two, and that's why the American culture is being bred out of existence by the other cultures coming in, and other cultures in other parts of the world, who are breeding rapidly and forming this sense of community, even if it's pretty bizarre in some of the extreme religions of the world. But we're disappearing because we're just too comfortable here and not taking on the responsibility of making marriage between a man and woman marriage, and not between, you know, two people of the same sex. And, you know, we're not spreading, if we would do that and not let homosexuality spread, we would have a lot of the diseases that we have that are venereal diseases. We're reaping the destruction of what we've sown by allowing this. And for Nye to say that, I mean, there's a special place for him, I'm sure.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Sad.
Well, Stan, that was a quick
man,
hour.
What happened? We just got started.
That was a quick
hour. Have you guys heard anything else on the Antarctic mysteries down there at all?
No, not at all.
No, I have not either. And I actually, from just my general daily research, it's been quiet on a lot of fronts. I haven't seen any forums with speculation about it, nor have I seen any news pertaining to it. So something that we'll have to keep our eye on.
Okay, well, not on the secret base or anything, but if you look at image 37 when we get off the air, click on that the picture and let it enlarge, and you'll see where they took two radar images of Antarctica, a certain part of it there where at the Larsen Sea ice shelf, and where you see the rainbow waves coming out from, you know, either a long red crack looking thing or a hillside or whatever, that's showing you the direction and the speed with which the ice is pulling apart there. And I thought it was just a very interesting piece of technology to have a look at. So have a look at that after the show, guys. Thanks for another happy time here.
Yeah, well, Stan, thank you. And folks, Dare to Prepare. That's about the challenge and the name of Holly Deo's book, Dare to Prepare. Grab yourself a copy of that, as well as Stan's book and his lecture series. My goodness.
And you got the May 1st is the drawing for the winners.
At midnight, May 1st. That's right. We've got quite a few entries, so people are interested.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you, Stan, for another great hour.
Audited by Price Waterhouse. Sorry.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll talk with you next
week. Buddy.
And tell Holly, give her our love.
I will do. Lord bless you now. Bye-bye.
All right, that will do it for us tonight. It's a great show. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry gave us a great breakdown of North Korean situation from all angles. And Stan Deo was our guest in the last hour, and the show just kind of went by real quick. Tomorrow we got another fantastic show lined up for you, so make sure that you are here with us.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. Folks, please subscribe to our YouTube channel.
We'll be back tomorrow. Stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening.